Coming up on Tech News Today, Microsoft and Comcast break up, but we've got good news about the return of a dot-com boom quality. Also, the meaning of Nokia's price cut, how to make a better Google TV, and how to print out a plane. All up on Know-How. I mean, Tech News Today.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, July 16th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Enhance Your Workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile by Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter the promo code TNT. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use offer code TNT7. And they now offer free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. And by Carbonite Online Backup, automatic, continual, and unlimited backup for your computer files for only $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use offer code TNT to get 2 bonus months with purchase. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us will be the new host of This Week in Enterprise Tech, Father Robert Ballesterre.
Woohoo!
Thank you for joining us. We're going to get digging into the tech news with Father Robert in just a minute, but let's start with the top 10 stories of the day in the news. One last remnant of the dot-com boom finally ended last night. NBC News announced it has taken full control of MSNBC.com from Microsoft and has begun redirecting MSNBC.com to NBCNews.com. The New York Times reports sources say Microsoft received $300 million for the deal. NBC plans to relaunch the MSNBC.com site as a companion for the TV channel sometime in 2013. NBC took control of MSNBC's TV channel back in 2005. Microsoft plans to hire its own news team for MSN.com.
Nokia has slashed the price of its Lumia 900 from the already, as many people think, low price of $99 to $49.99 in an attempt many see as a way to increase market share over more expensive but popular phones from Samsung and Apple. The phone is still exclusive to AT&T and originally went on sale in April of this year.
Wolf, I mean iPad Mini. The New York Times.
You can't keep crying iPad Mini.
I'm going to keep doing it.
All right.
Anybody who will listen.
There's an iPad Mini at the door about to eat me.
The New York Times is telling everybody who will read its content that Apple is working on a 7.85-inch tablet that will cost less than the cheapest iPad. The Times says it'll be announced later this year. And guess what? Apple didn't comment, so wait.
Microsoft has a news conference today at 12 Pacific time to announce details about the next version of Microsoft Office. The new Office will come for ARM-based processors running Windows RT, and all versions will be more touchscreen friendly.
Can we expect OS X Mountain Lion on July 25th? 9to5 Mac cites several sources. They report Apple stores in both the U.S. and overseas have planned overnights for Tuesday, July 24th, which could point to a public launch the following day. If you look back to last year, Apple announced Lion's July 20th release at their Q3 earnings announcement, which was July 19th. This year, the earnings report is July 24th. It just makes rumory sense.
You know, people complain that we don't report about good news about RIM. Well, when it happens, we'll let you know, but today isn't that day. A federal jury says RIM must pay $147.2 million in damages for infringing on patents owned by M Formation. M Formation makes mobile device management software and sued RIM back in 2008.
Fans of custom Android ROMs have a good option now. The landing page for the Galaxy S3 Developer Edition for Verizon is live on Samsung's website. Verizon's version of the SGS3 is the only U.S. one that ships with a locked bootloader. Samsung promised to sell an unlocked Developer's Edition for $599.
Photos leaked from Apple.pro show the next iPhone may not only have that taller screen, already rumored, but maybe also a center-aligned FaceTime camera, which would live right above the speaker. And Gadget notes the change, while small, might point to more of an Apple family resemblance this time around. The company does love their whole consistency thing.
Now, we may have lost the Microsoft NBC partnership today, but one relic of the dot-com boom era is back. crazy venture capital investments. USVC sunk $8.1 billion into 812 deals in Q2 of this year, the single largest quarter since sock puppets roamed the internet. Early stage investments got more money than usual, and EdTech, e-commerce, and enterprise funding seem to be the favorites.
Skype's got some explaining to do. Skype users are complaining that IMs are being sent to the wrong contact. So here's how this works. Communications between two people are being sent to an unintended third person. The support thread at the Skype forum say the problem stems from a Skype upgrade. Skype says it's aware of the situation and is rolling out a fix.
Good thing people don't ever IM sensitive information to each other.
No.
Thank goodness this is really a non-issue.
How do you undo one of those? Let's take a break and thank our sponsor for today, Citrix and ShareFile. Sending and receiving documents through the email is a key part of business, and sending large and important files as regular attachments is risky and frustrating. Unless you got a service like ShareFile, they won't bounce back as undeliverable. You're not uncertain whether other people got the files or not. ShareFile by Citrix makes business communication easy and confidential. You're not just throwing something up in a shared box somewhere on the internet. You've got a secure folder. You have access to that folder. You can limit access to the folder. You can password protect it. And people who get it, they don't have to go through some funky process to open the files. It works right through Outlook. You can send files of almost any size, easy to use. Plus, ShareFile has an amazing support team. If you do have questions, they're available to answer any question you have. I use this because I sent some sensitive files through ShareFile recently. And I was like, hey, did you get those files? Oh, yeah, I got them. I'm like, no, you didn't. I looked in ShareFile. You haven't accessed them yet. Oh, I thought I... Yeah, okay. See, it's good stuff. So to get you started, I have a special offer. Sign up today and receive a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click on the radio microphone, enter the promo code TNT. Remember, visit ShareFile.com and type in the promo code TNT. We thank Citrix and ShareFile for their support of Tech News Today. Prices are going lower on the Nokia Lumia 900. What does it all mean, though?
It means that, according to the Nokia spokesperson, they say the move is not unusual, and it's part of its normal strategy. Now, this Nokia Lumia 900 was introduced way, way back. It's like an old relic of technology back in April. So not exactly
things were more expensive then.
Yeah, back then, the world's a different place.
Yeah, April. Things were simpler.
So it used to cost $100, now it's $50. Are we buying the normal strategy line, or is this because the phone can't be upgraded to Windows Phone 8?
It's a fire sale. It's panic. It's get these things out the door. They Osborne themselves. I mean, you don't release... I mean, the phone is sexy. I actually like Windows Phone. I like the design of the Lumia. But you can't release a phone and then immediately say, oh, and by the way, this is a dead end. You won't be able to upgrade this. You won't be able to get the latest and greatest features. You won't be able to get the promise of Windows Phone.
You will be able to upgrade it, but it's to that 7.8 version, which is kind of more of an interface tweak than anything.
Yeah, exactly. It's an interface tweak. And what they're telling you is, well, we need Windows Phone 8 because Windows Phone 7 isn't cutting it. So you're going to have to rebuy your phone in about a year. If you want to stay on this platform, you're going to have to rebuy your phone. When you find that new feature that suddenly makes the phone compelling, you're going to have to upgrade or get out of your contract or cancel it. That's just, it's suicide in the carrier game.
Well, but if you have a $50 phone, it's a lot easier for someone to say once a year, something like this is not going to break the bank. Then when you get into, I mean, when it was originally announced, we all went, Lumia 900, $100, wow, is that almost going to work against them because people are going to think this is a really cheap phone because it was a nice low, low price. $50 is even more of a throwaway price, and I'm not saying that $50 is not a lot of money. But as far as phones go, it's something that it would be easier to justify. Yeah, you got to upgrade more regularly, but that's okay because it was only $50 anyway.
But I mean, the phone price is de minimis. It's nothing when you look at 2 years worth of a $100 a month plan.
You with your fancy Latin.
Actually, that's an IaaS term, so it's all good. The thing about this is I would buy the Lumia for $50 if it became, say, a pay-as-you-go phone. If I could put it on T-Mobile and get a couple of months of service and then buy the next one when they come out with the 8, which I think that's pretty much the only way they're going to get rid of their stock.
Which, I mean, Nokia is... I don't know if Nokia is funding part of this discount or not, but this is a subsidized price, right? The way those usually work is the carrier pays full price to Nokia for the phone and then takes back the money in your two-year contract. So, of course, you're not going to give a $50 phone like the Lumia 900 and expect no contract for it.
Well, the official price cut is somewhat meaningless. If you go to, like, wireless.amazon.com, you can get it for a penny. You can get some of these phones for almost free, Windows Phone devices or not. The thing is, the cost almost is a non-issue with the Lumia 900 is are people going to buy this device? And if I was Nokia, I'd just be absolutely burned about what happened with Microsoft. They went all in with Microsoft. They have a one-year phone. That Windows Phone 7 turned out to be the stopgap solution before Windows Phone 8. You have this device that could have been more that maybe if Microsoft said, hey, by the way, maybe you put in a dual-core chip. Just turn off one of the cores, and in November, you're going to be thrilled because you have the only Windows phone that could take advantage of things because I know you can do this with processors. I just don't know what Nokia got out of this deal such that they would stick to Microsoft after a long after this thing.
I think what's going on here is we're seeing the relaunch of Windows Phone. Mm-hmm. And the way Microsoft does things, they never clean the slate. This isn't OS 9 to OS 10, right, where they're like, that's it. No backwards compatibility. They are giving you a little bit of an update, trying to make it say, oh, well, if you have Windows Phone 7, you're going to get 7.8, and that rounds up to 8. It's almost the same thing.
It's 0.2 off.
And frankly, to most consumers out there, it is going to appear to be the same thing. Even though it's missing a lot of the back-end features, a lot of people won't notice that. So I think Nokia is looking at it as, you know what, we need to get the sophisticated users with Windows Phone 8. Let's focus on them. In the meantime, let's clear out these Lumia 900s to people for $50.
Here's the funny thing. I mean, the Windows 8 thing actually isn't that big of an issue. You've got millions of Android users out there who are stuck on even 2-3 versions ago of Android. They don't care. They just want a phone. It works well. It works well for them. The Lumias are very nice phones. But there's something about having Microsoft behind it. There's something about the Windows 8 debacle. There's something about the fact that they made the Premier line so obsolete so quickly that has people wary. I have to think it's not just interface. It's not just hardware. It's people saying, we don't know if Microsoft knows what they're doing.
Yeah, and Microsoft's hoping that everyone just forgets once Windows Phone 8 launches. Right. Like, the history begins in the fall with Windows 8.
Yeah, I think that 3% of the U.S. market share will kind of forget pretty easily, or they'll forgive.
Everything else is Beast or MSNBC or something like that. All right, let's... hey, where'd Sarah go? It looks like she walked down the hill to the rumor mill.
Just come back, Sarah. There's
it's
a show
so
to do.
Nice down here. All right, the rumor mill this time is, I'm going to give you one guess. I don't even need to.
Samsung. Galaxy S4.
Oh. God, you're so wrong. Come down to the rumor mill.
Sure,
it's nice
sure.
down here. I'm, of course, talking about the iPad Mini. And the reason we're talking about the iPad Mini again is because over the weekend, the New York Times joined on the bandwagon of rumor mills saying, we also have sources.
Along we got
with
sources.
The Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg and all sorts of tech blogs. Who also say that, yes, the 7-dot-whatever-inch iPad,
usually, yeah.
Right, iPad Mini, supposedly the same ratio as the full iPad, just a little bit smaller, is coming. What's interesting, though, is that even though they don't have a specific price point, New York Times says, and we hear it's coming for significantly less than a $400 price tag. Significantly less? Does that mean half as much? Does that mean the same
well,
thing as a Nexus 7?
Right? So
correct.
Could be $399 significantly less? I mean, that's significantly more than a Nexus 7.
Yeah, that's true. I guess at this point, I'm going to go ahead and say I believe that this is something that's happening. I even believe that it's going to happen in October. I feel like we've gotten enough of these anonymous sources reporting in that I'm going to go ahead and say this is a sure thing. What I don't know and what really fascinates me at this point is that price point. I mean, you have to compete with the Nexus 7 at least in the ballpark because the Nexus 7 has been so well received. People really like the Nexus 7. I mean, that is the 7-inch tablet that makes people say, oh, I actually need a 7-inch tablet.
But
it's so much better than a full size iPad in a variety of ways.
Apple never seems to play the race to the bottom game, though. Even their lower priced hardware is still priced higher than most of the competition because people have this value assessment about Apple products and saying, well, I'm willing to pay more for their products because their quality.
That's the weird thing about the whole 7-inch iPad because Apple doesn't play low-end. It's never wanted to play a low-end. It's perfectly fine leaving the low-end to other manufacturers. It wants the high-margin devices. That being said, I absolutely believe the rumors because I actually have a prototype of the 7-inch iPad. It's right here. It's probably the best iPad they've ever made. It's really, really well done. And
that looks pretty good.
I think they got a winner in this.
How did you get that Nexus 7 in your hand? Did you? Is that from I/O or
this is from I/O?
Yeah. Oh, okay,
the white background.
Because you know, as you were saying, Sarah, they're selling like hotcakes, and in fact, they're already sold out at retail. But some people have been able to go into a store though and get an XS7. I'm still waiting for mine to ship.
Yeah, mine is going to show up tomorrow at the Brick House. I'm excited about that. But I mean, this idea that Apple doesn't necessarily go for the low end of the market. Apple has cannibalized its sales before with things like the iPod Mini, the Shuffle, the Nano. So they have gone into that. Mm-hmm. Even the Mac Mini. This is the idea of like, you know what? If people aren't buying our products, maybe we have to come out with this. And the thing is, I'm looking at the iPod Touch right now. It costs $200. If they don't go with a Retina display, considering Apple supply chain, they probably could get it under $200, maybe $249 for an 8-gigabyte version, because you don't have to have that same Retina display. You just need a 1280x800 display. And Apple has a lot of contacts in the display business when it comes to
generating
those
things. Nexus 7 is about sold at cost, mm-hmm, because Google can make it up on advertising in the ecosystem. Apple doesn't do that. Apple makes their money on the hardware. So if we assume that they can get the cost down, are they going to be able to get it down far enough below to compete at $199?
I think so, because if the iPod Touch costs $200, that must mean they're making a profit on that. And there must be a margin on that, because I'm thinking, I guess in my head, for some reason, the Retina display costs as much as a 4-inch Retina display costs probably about
Nexus
as much.
Nexus 7 isn't a Retina display either.
That'll be a lower res screen that's a little larger. So the thing is, if you're buying less resolution but a larger screen, it might even out to the point where, sure, you have to have a larger battery.
But it's the same resolution as the Nexus 7.
No, the resolution on the pixel density on an iPod Touch is greater than that of a Nexus 7. So if you lower the pixel density, the cost should go down slightly.
But then I don't think they're going to lower that, though.
No, but then you have to increase the price because it's a 7-inch. So I'm saying that it might even out the cost of the display.
I don't know. That seems a little janky to me.
It seems Tim Cook to me.
I think what is Tim Cook to me is the idea that Apple has so much cash and supply chain tie-up that the same parts will just cost them less.
Oh, yeah.
Because they can make better deals and strike better deals than other people.
You know, Rene Ritchie of iMore was reminding some folks on Twitter last night that back in May, he had claimed, there were some reliable sources that had told iMore, the iPad Mini, because of course we've been talking about this for months now, might be priced between $200 and $250. This is before Google I/O. This is before the Nexus 7. So this is already a price point that some were claiming Apple can take advantage of. This. It's now just turned into a game of, can they match Google in price? Because Google ended up coming out so low with a 7-inch tablet that people really, really like.
I was thinking about the $99 Apple television. It's effectively the same guts.
Do they need to match them in price? Or can they say, This is an iPad, it's $299, mm-hmm, so there.
The value proposition is our ecosystem. You already know that we've got all of these apps and blah, 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 blah.
I think that they'd probably go $249. For the 8 gigabyte.
Maybe,
because that would give them a hefty profit. And it does show premium quality. And then they can always have
but
the competition.
But it's really close, yeah. And there is a Nexus 7 for $249.
There you go.
I mean, the question is, what is Apple trying to cannibalize? They're obviously not going to try to cannibalize their full-size iPad sales, because that's making them a mint. I think the 7-inch tablet is actually aimed more at people who might buy a Touch.
Right.
If that's the case, it needs to be touch priced. It needs to be needs to be a no-brainer to decide between a Touch and a 7-inch tablet, but then quite a bit more to buy the full size. I think that's going to be the pricing strategy.
All right, let's talk about, you know, you have those friends and you know the relationship's over, but they just keep stringing it along for years and years and years. Well, it's a relief for everybody when it finally. That's Microsoft and NBC. They've, as we mentioned in the news, she's finally split up. So MSNBC.com now redirects to NBCNews.com, and MSN now is going to have to hire its own news team. NBC will no longer be the exclusive news provider for MSN. MSN can do its own. It can also strike deals with ABC and CBS and everybody else. MSN will continue to send traffic to NBC, though. They haven't ended their relationship entirely. They're actually still continuing to sell ads temporarily for NBCNews.com. And then a website for the channel, MSNBC, is set to launch sometime in 2013. So here's the interesting thing. Everybody's talking about the NBC News side of this, but all that makes sense. You had a channel out there on television that didn't have its own website, for all intents and purposes. So that makes sense. They've got that in the works. For now, it's NBCNews.com. That's what we think of MSNBC is. It's part of NBC News. That all makes sense. But Microsoft hiring a news team, why do they do that? If they no longer need to have an exclusivity with NBC, why not just go out and say, hey, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, you know, top new ABC News, CBS, let's make a portal here. Why would Microsoft get further into the business of original content.
I think there's a good chance that Microsoft has seen what's gone on with Google, where Google would scrape content, or they've seen other content providers have these deals. I mean, we talk about this with Dish TV and DirecTV, where content partnerships can go sour, like this one. And the point is, they don't want to be left out in the cold. And if they have their own team, at least they can still control that. Probably means that they're going to supplement heavily from Reuters and AP and a bunch of other sources. But if they have their own content, they can promote it in any which way, and they don't have to worry about losing it in the long term.
Content's expensive, though. You got to hire journalists, and they drink a lot. No, seriously. I mean, hiring bodies, especially journalistic bodies who are busy creating stories, is different than hiring a team that's doing aggregation development. It's a lot cheaper to do aggregation.
But Microsoft has experience with this. They know that killer content can make all the difference in selling a product. You look at an Xbox. One of the things that sells any game console, not just the Xbox, is if you have something that people can only get on that particular platform, it drives sales. And I think that's what Microsoft's looking at. They're going to make a lot of really bad content. They know that. But if they can make that one good thing, and it might be a news program, it might be they're trying to develop other, more interesting types of content, then, yeah, they can use that as sort of a wedge and say, hey, you know what? Check out this brand new Windows 8 laptop. And, oh, by the way, you get a free 2-year subscription to this show, which was fantastic. I think they're thinking ahead. I've talked to a few people at Microsoft, and they're of the mindset now that they're tired of following what other people are doing. They don't want to just set up a bunch of content deals. Like Aya said, they actually want something of their own.
Something they can point to.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Squarespace.com. The fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. There has never been a better time to sign up for Squarespace. You don't need a credit card to do it either. If you'd want to just say, well, let me investigate this Squarespace thing, go do it right now, Squarespace.com. You don't have to give them any credit card information. You don't have to commit to anything. You can even import your current site and see what it looks like. They have this great tool that'll take your site and put it in their template, and you can play with the colors, use those options to create your site, see what it looks like. If you want to get under the hood and tweak some of the code, you can, but you don't have to. It's all easy to use, optimized for both beginners and experts. And the best part is you can get 24 hours, 7 days a week support. If you run into a question, you're like, wait a minute, how do I do this? Call them up. They're there all the time. They even offer free live webinar classes to help you get the most out of your blog. So go check it out. Try it out. We think you'll like it. If you do, here's what you want to do. You want to sign up for the account using the offer code TNT7 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. And don't forget, that's 10% off the first month. Or if you pay for a year, you get 10% off the entire year. So it's even a better deal if you get the year. And you get free domain registration with that annual plan subscription. This is a domain name that is yours to keep, but you just get it as part of the sign-up process. It's super easy. So try it out, squarespace.com. Like I said, you don't even need to give them credit card information. We think you'll like it. And if you do, use that offer code TNT7 and get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. Squarespace.com, we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Speaking of news, Microsoft's going to try to hire their own news team, but YouTube's got lots of news, and it just comes from the people.
Yeah, the Pew Research Center has been studying news over the last year or so. It's actually their center project for excellence in journalism. They were examining the news scene over 15 months of the most popular news videos that were on YouTube, and they actually came up with some interesting stuff. Some of it seems pretty self-explanatory, like, hey, people get news from the internet now. Well, we all know that.
That's shocking.
Right. But more specifically, the amount of news that folks were digesting from YouTube versus professional journalism. The places, the established news sources where you say you heard that there was an earthquake in Japan, for example. Where do you go to get that information? Well, they had found more than one-third of the most watched videos came from citizens. More than half came from news organizations, but this is actually where it gets a little bit murky and interesting, is many of those news organizations, and think back to the earthquake and tsunami in Japan last year, a lot of those news organizations had picked up content that was created by citizens and uploaded to YouTube to fill up their broadcast.
This is big
because
mishmash.
That's where they were getting their content along with the rest of us, just perhaps putting it in a little bit more of a linear story for those to understand. So then, again, the earthquake and tsunami were the most viewed news events During the length of the study, again, it was a 15-month period, spanned January 2011 to March 2012. And then they have some kind of interesting key findings here that if you've got intense visuals, you win. Obviously, if it's a natural disaster, that's a little bit different. But intense visuals in general, you could think back to the riots in Egypt.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was extremely visual as well. And it really helped tell the story.
Anything that's dramatic.
Dramatic and not
attention.
Necessarily of great quality. Mm-hmm. Just something that you can recognize.
Well, in fact, sometimes poor quality video plays as more dramatic because it's shaky and it's in the moment and that sort of thing. So that makes sense.
Another thing that Pew had found, which could be scary for some of us sitting at this table, is that personality is not a main driver of people watching
interesting
content. It actually works in our favor, really. Or else we'd be out of a job. But when it comes to the news, it's not necessarily that you have to have it presented to you in a certain way. Probably why I don't watch a lot of traditional news anymore, or at least a lot less than I used to back in the day. Length, not necessarily important. Again, back in the day, and obviously this is the way that television still works, length is very important. People have short attention spans. You got to have a commercial break at this time. We don't have those same rules under Twit, but when you talk about raw footage on YouTube, same idea. If people are interested, they'll keep watching.
Yeah.
Whether it's a second or many, many minutes long. Again, it gets into how does this all work? If a news organization doesn't properly credit a citizen who has uploaded to YouTube, that's a problem. But what if the uploader can't be identified for whatever reason? What if the uploader didn't actually have the rights to that video in the first place?
What if they're just ripping off somebody else's video and passing it off as their own?
What if somehow in that footage, they somehow contain footage of another news organization that they don't have the rights to? So we talk about this a lot. There's certainly no one answer to how this is all going to work going forward, but internet video as a news source, I think, is here to stay.
It sounds like network news needs the VIA tag. Like, we got it from VIA, this guy, and we don't know where he got it or where how it was shot. And it's like, VIA YouTube user 3812. You're like, okay.
This is where we saw it.
That's where we saw it. You can go see it, too, and we have nothing to... Like, I guess that would mean the news organizations are a bit of dumb pipes kind of concept. They're like, yeah, we got it from them, but we don't know. We're not going to research everything, are we?
I mean, a lot of that already happens. It seems like as we move forward... A nice standard, which I think we see a lot of on tech blogs. The Verge does it really well, but I mean, that's the standard. You credit your original source, and if you don't, you're going to get flack for it.
Well, verification is always another big problem with something like YouTube, where if it is actually real video from on the scene, it can be incredibly valuable because this is footage that you can't get anywhere else, and you get it faster, right? Somebody shoots it on their phone, uploads it, instant news. But is it faked? Is it it can easily be turned into something that isn't valuable news if you're not careful. And I think we're trying to work that part out.
This story concerns me greatly because we all know that traditional media companies have long suffered under draconian copyright laws. So, we need to fix this now that they're being affected.
Because they're having their news stolen.
That's right. there is an interesting social aspect to this, and it really deals with the millennial generation, and that's what they trust. And what we've learned is this generation doesn't trust the talking head. This generation doesn't trust the news agency that says we're unbiased or that, we're so interested in every single story. They pick out insincerity so quickly, and that's why they flock to videos on YouTube. They may not be high quality, but they're very honest. Even if they're completely biased, they're still very, very honest. And people just tend to gravitate towards that.
Yeah, we have a need to see what actually happened,
right?
Rather than having it filtered. And YouTube provides that, or at least provides the illusion of that. It provides both. The question is sifting it out. We have a new XBMC for Android.
Woohoo!
Yeah. IS thinks maybe this
I'm excited.
Could become his Google TV.
Well,
not his Google television.
I think a Google TV can be way more useful. Now, this news is out. This happened on Friday, though, and it blew up over the weekend. XBMC announced that they're launching a version of XBMC for Android that would have the same functions as the desktop version. Now, there's already an XBMC out there that lets you interact with an installation on a Mac, Windows machine, or a Linux machine, or anything else it runs on.
It's Media Center software, and if you know Boxy, Boxy is based on XBMC.
Boxy is based on it, Plex is based on it, and XBMC is very popular. It was based off the Xbox Media Center, that's why it's got XBMC as the name. Currently, due to a lack of universal hardware decoding, though, video playback relies on software acceleration. So the source code's out right now. Beta's expected in a few weeks. No official release date yet, But XBMC has a sponsor for this project called Pivos. I've never heard of them before. Pivos makes a set-top box called the Zios DS. Now, this is an Android-powered set-top box that costs about $115. I saw it on Newegg. And it's running with hardware acceleration for video decoding. So you're talking about some extraordinarily cheap, potentially media center boxes. Like, there's the video right now. This is the developer version of it. They have it running right now, and it's smooth. It's really smooth. So if you have a home media situation like I do, I have a bunch of my movies backed up, I can access them with this. Or the amount of plugins that are available are incredible for this. So let's say the Ouya. So if you wanted to hack the Ouya, the $99 game console that's coming out, and you put on Android and then you put on this app, you can have a media streamer. You can watch things like Twit or Revision 3. You can watch ESPN. I was doing it this morning via XBMC. There's a lot of plugins for this that make it way more robust than the Chrome browser on Google TV, which gets blocked, and all this other stuff. The workarounds on XBMC are incredible.
And if you're on the audio podcast, we'll have a link to that video in the show notes where you can take a look at what Ayaz is talking about.
And XBMC is also working. They expect that skins will be developed for the handheld because right now the interfaces are all 10-foot interfaces, so they're very large. But if you got these small screens, there's a good chance you can skin this very easily.
I'm with Ayaz. I'm super excited about this because if you look at XBMC and the origins, and I remember the very first time I installed it on a hacked Xbox, the original Xbox, and it was incredible what you could do with it. I mean, it was eye-opening. In fact, Apple TV, Google TV, they're just now starting to approach the functionality you got with that XBMC 10 years ago. So let's make this offer. I've got both a Q and a Sony Google TV. I mean, if you want to know-how it, get XBMC
well, first,
on there.
First, I have to tell them I get a Q. I'm sure, Jason, you got a Q hanging around.
I have a Q.
The Q costs $300. But the thing is, Android devices are getting so cheap, there's really no reason to do that with a Q unless you, unfortunately, were given one by Google, I guess.
Did you put it on a Raspberry Pi?
You could. I believe there's a special version of Linux for Raspberry Pi that already includes XBMC.
Uh-huh.
So, but I'm just thinking about other, like the Nexus 7, if you want to put XBMC on there, you could do that. I'm just thinking of all the fun stuff you can do because that's really cheap hardware and you can do some really powerful things.
Sarah, you're a cord cutter. Is this something that could fill a need for you?
The way I kind of see this is Google TV is something that we've all been fairly excited about. But it never really lives up to its promise. I mean, in fact, even the latest Google TV offering from Sony, the reviews I've read is people saying Google TV still isn't ready for prime time. There's still issues. This is the sort of thing where I go, if that makes Google TV better, then that just makes it better for everybody. It certainly makes it better for Google, even though it's not necessarily an offering that's coming out of Google itself or Android. But media management is really important to a lot of people. I know you talk about it all the time. And I'm always looking for solutions that work well but are really simple because I already have a lot of set-top boxes and I don't look to complicate
right. The
way that I manage my media. But it is important, and especially as a cord cutter, it's absolutely important. And I think it looks really good. From what I can see, this thing looks really slick. It's not some hacky workaround type of a thing. This is something you would want to run on a system.
And for media management, like there are plugins that will search your files and try to find like the album art. So you're not just looking at a bunch of generic little movie reel or something. They will find the movie you have or the song you have, and then it becomes a lot easier to find your things because normally you're stuck in this interface where you're like, oh, my Apple TV doesn't understand what that is. It's not showing me the thumbnail. I didn't set it up in their format. But the plugins for XBMC make it much neater. I mean, I don't know if this is going to appeal to the masses, but as somebody on the fringe who loves this kind of stuff, I'm excited because I think it's really easy to use.
Another milestone on the way to cord cutting is the ability to subscribe to a television service directly over the internet, not have to go through a cable or satellite provider. We sort of have that with Netflix and Hulu Plus, but it's not streaming channels. It's not a cable provider. And big news from BSkyB is they are unveiling their internet-only TV service called Now TV. It's only available for UK subscribers. And they'll only start with movies first. Sky Movies will get launched first. Then later this year, they expect Sky Sports and Sky Entertainment to follow. You don't have to be a Sky subscriber to get Now TV. That's the big change. You can just be on your internet connection, subscribe to this, and for £15 per month, so it's a little expensive compared to a Netflix, you get on-demand and streaming movies. Now, the on-demand movies are pay-per-view. You have to pay an extra 99 pence up to £3.49 for those. But for the £15 per month subscription, you just get their movie channels. And the difference they're hoping is that you'll pay the extra because they get faster access than a Netflix or a Love Film will get. This is the kind of movies you see on HBO, Showtime, et cetera, et cetera. It's the movies you see on Sky, on the Sky movie channels that you get over satellite, you'll get on the internet. Sky Sports will have top sports as well. They're going to miss the Premier League debut in August, it looks like. So that may, you know, dissuade some people from trying this because they won't want to wait around for it. But they will be having Premier League soccer matches, top flight cricket matches, all the sports that the UK folks care about will be available there. And they're doing it on the cheap. Right. So they don't have to install any cable boxes in your home. They don't have to put up any satellite dishes. They don't have to broadcast satellite back down to you. It's all just done over the internet. They're also not doing any support over the telephone, only doing online chat support. And they're pushing their forums to let viewers help each other out. And of course, you will have to get a Sky account. So you may have to put up with some upselling. They may be trying to move you to the satellite service where they make more money.
I want to be excited. Yeah. I really, but I've heard this so many times before. I'm a cord cutter. I love streaming my content. But every single service that has come out, even if it sounded super, super wonderful at the beginning, has always crippled the content in one way or another. It's a show that I can't get that I really want.
You've been burned too many times.
I've been burned too many times. I've been spurned. You know, it's one of these things where, yes, the technology is there. Now, BSkyB is going to have to deal with this content provider and that content provider saying, we don't want to give you everything. We're only going to give you the first and the last episode of every season. Or we want to give it to you a week after we release it. So, yeah, good promise, but until I actually see them deliver.
But the Sky Movies channel won't be that. Sky Movies will be the channel that they have on television streamed over the internet. Now, that's the way I read it. You're right. Now you're infecting me because I'm getting like, or is it the exact same channel? Do they have a separate channel? But what they're out there touting is the movies we get access to will be streamed over the internet. I don't know how they were able to get this agreement, but they have been
until the studio figures out what they're doing and is going to say, well, if you're doing that, we want a bigger cut. We want more licensing.
Well, the one thing they are doing is not streaming it at high def. They will stream it at 720p on the Xbox eventually. But for the beginning, it's all adaptive bitrate streaming. So that may be the thing is like, hey, you can still get the high-def version elsewhere. And so that may mollify the studio.
So the concession is going to be they're going to actually show you a camera looking at a TV showing the movie.
Not quite that bad. Yeah.
I'd like to know which of these pay-per-view movies are going to be on top of the £15 per month cost. Because
I think, again,
if I feel nickel and dimed, then even something that seems like a good idea and has a little bit of an a la carte type of an offering ends up being more than you bargained
for. It feels
for.
Like what Comcast and DirecTV do, where they have the pay-per-view channel with the even sooner run movies, right? Mm-hmm. You get the movies that are just out of the theater and you pay a little bit for those. Again, that's what it seems like they're doing is for £15 a month, you get our movie channels that right. you would get on television, streamed directly over the internet. And then we also have our pay-per-view service that you could also get over satellite available on the internet.
I think I'm the only optimist here. I'm just hoping this actually works. I hope it works the way they're building it up. And I would love for this to be a model that other people follow. This is what I'm just hoping for. Like, if this actually works the way they say it will, that could be very impressive. I mean, the thing is, over the UK, things are totally different than it is here. I mean, we have so many arguments about silly things, but if this stuff works, I mean, like, I don't see why this can be a worldwide model when it comes to television. So I'm going to remain optimistic when it comes to this. Everyone's
wow.
going to be sour on it.
Look at that. I, as being the optimist. Cats, dogs, randomizers.
End of times.
Randomizer.
Hey, you want to print out a plane?
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
3D printing is coming to Airbus. Airbus designer, anyway, is saying that over the next 40 years or so it's not coming terribly soon, he thinks that they could create a hangar-sized 3D printer that would print out all the parts you need to assemble a plane. Bastian Schaefer said it would have to be about 80 by 80 meters. He was talking to Forbes about this, but it could be feasible, and the parts would be 65% lighter than those made with traditional manufacturing methods.
I mean, I think people see the phrase 3D printing, like, oh, that's crazy. It's like I can do it with my own machine.
They imagine pressing a button and an airplane pops out.
Like there's a giant inkjet or something, and like layer by layer by layer.
Or the cupcake.
I mean, fabrication is fabrication. If you're going to have a giant hangar that's just putting out machines, that's great. I mean, if it makes it cheaper and you can have higher quality and maybe different style planes, I could see that being pretty cool. Like customized versions, like Maybe we don't want 18-inch seats. Maybe we want 24-inch seats everywhere. That'll be that plane. The next plane could be an 18-incher and all the other differences. If they can customize the planes with the printer, that'd be neater. So there.
What really surprises me about the story is that it's Airbus, because Boeing has actually pioneered some manufacturing techniques that, like, for example, they don't have to wait for parts. They've got specially assembled jigs that allow them to place parts as they're coming in, so they can assemble the plane without the core. It seems like this would be a natural next step for that kind of manufacturing process. So, you know, maybe Airbus is doing a little leapfrog in tech here.
Yeah, well, at least they're trying to battle that perception. Yeah.
It's a lot of ink.
Ink's really expensive.
It is.
Well, it's just those little plastic spools like you get for the MakerBot, right?
Wow.
You just need like
he's going to be recycled responsibly. Yeah.
Actually,
they're all
yes.
Good together.
They talk about how the parts 100% recyclable cabin is one of the things Bastian Schaefer did talk about.
That's amazing.
Of course, I hope you know you wait till it lands.
You crash it hard enough, it will be redistributed into the earth. So
well, I was just hoping that it would be retired then used again instead of like these long lifespans of current planes where you're like, is that a CRT? That is a CRT. They are never going to upgrade this plane.
Yeah.
It's got another 15 years on its life. Please, just recycle it now.
By the way, I just flew Virgin America for the first time in a while, and they must have replaced the processors in all their seatback things because it's much faster now, much more responsive.
More responsive. People
still, it's still Linux. It's still Linux.
Still resistive touchscreen?
Yeah, it's still resistive, but it works better. Let's take a break and thank our last sponsor for this show, Carbonite Online Backup. Are your computers backed up right now? Are you sure? Are they backed up in multiple places? Because what you should do, I do this, and so that's why I preach. But not everyone at this table does this. I'm not going to name any names. But you should back up to your hard drive locally so that you have a local backup, and you should back up in the cloud. And Carbonite protects you in the cloud. Your files are automatically and continually backed up. They're stored safely offsite. And after you have a computer disaster, it's easy to restore them. Plus, you can access your backed up files privately on any computer, on your smartphone or iPad with the free app. Unlimited backup for your PC or Mac is only $59 a year. So there's really no excuses. There's no reason not to back up to the cloud. Be safe. You will be surprised how much less you'll worry about your data. Unlimited backup, $59, but try it for free. Go to carbonite.com, enter the offer code TNT. You'll get 2 bonus months free if you decide to buy with that offer code TNT. Be sure to sign up for the free trial from the homepage to get those 2 months free. No credit card required for the free trial, though. That's carbonite.com, offer code TNT, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. What's on the calendar, Sarah?
Glad you asked, Tom. The Asus Transformer Pad Infinity TF700, the Wi-Fi model, is available in the U.S. starting this week. It's already showed up at Office Depot and Amazon. $499 for the 32-gigabyte model, $599 for the 64. It does have a separate keyboard dock that'll run you $149. There's an LTE version in the works, but so far Asus has only announced a date for the Wi-Fi version. If you're getting one, let us know. Or if you've gotten it and you like it, also let us know. The Sony NSZ GS7, we talked about Google TV's new offerings earlier in the show, is bringing this Google TV to the UK starting today, to the US on July 22nd for $199. Sony also plans to launch this model in Australia, Brazil, Canada, France, Germany, Mexico, and the Netherlands later this year. And finally, up in Portland, Oregon, OSCON, the Open Source Convention, is going on all week today through Friday the 20th.
Onward to incoming.
Incoming message.
And then in. Ashley wrote in after we had our special on bandwidth caps on Friday, which is available in our Twit feeds at twit.tv/specials. If you're interested in finding out, what are these bandwidth caps? Are they really necessary? We had people inside the business explain what's really going on with them. Ashley said, I'm a single mom with 2 kids. We have a desktop, laptop, 2 iPads, Kindle Fire, multiple iPods, 2 Apple TVs, a Roku player, Netflix, and Hulu subscriptions.
Sounds like my house.
Guess what? She's hitting up against her bandwidth cap. She says, I've run up against the 150 gigabyte per month cap that AT&T implements. The addition of multiple devices and children that are old enough to be interested in streaming video has definitely affected our household. What is the answer? Should I kick the kids off their devices? Which honestly may not be a bad thing. Should I stop downloading twit.tv podcasts? That would be a horrible idea.
No,
honestly,
don't do that.
No. Should I limit my Netflix or Hulu consumption? Probably, but honestly, I hate having to deal with this. I would much rather pay more for unlimited service than get the nasty emails advising that I'm approaching my cap. In all reality, at this point, I'm ignoring the emails. The cost for an additional 50 gigabytes of data is $10, so it's not breaking the bank. I just wish their email was nicer. I have, however, put a reminder to check out cable internet, which will provide faster speeds and no caps currently. Cable internet has caps in some places, not in others. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? Usually what this would do is force you to go check out the competition. There's not always that much competition. And Ashley's pointing out a really important factor here, the mental factor of, I don't even care if I can afford the extra bandwidth. I don't want to have to run into a cap. I don't want to have to think about it.
I mean, this is the kind of thing that would stop. Like the B Sky B story, right? We have that issue. Like, okay, I want to get all my content online. Now I have a cap. And then they'll sell you, hey, by the way, you know, if you'd use our cable system, you don't have to worry about that. And it'll work on every device. And you have to worry. Like, that's the selling that can happen. I mean, this is a very annoying thing that happens with, like, distributed content. You have to manage it. And that's why there's another reason why I was super excited about XBMC. Let it manage everything for me. But this kind of problem is very real and it needs to be dealt with.
Onward to another email.
This one comes from Chandler. Says, I don't know if any of you have been to the Westfield Valley Fair Mall in Santa Clara recently. Chandler, I have not.
No,
can't speak
either.
For the rest of the group. Chandler says, I went through the mall when I was there in March, and under the corner of my eye, I saw an Apple store. Or so I thought, because it was actually a Microsoft store. He then has a link to a Microsoft store video where he says, in this video, I found 8 similarities. Can you find more?
It's like
this is in reaction to last week, Aya saying, look at this store.
It's the Samsung
looks
store,
just
yeah.
like an Apple store, but it's a Samsung store.
Samsung store looks a little bit more like the Microsoft store because it's got an extra video wall.
Yeah. So I think it's just all of these stores are looking.
Everybody's got blonde wood these
like
days and people in blue
other.
Shirts.
Stores look alike.
I have a mark of shame here. I've actually been to every Microsoft store in the country.
That's a badge of honor.
Is that something that you've
How many
done
are there?
On purpose there's or it's just sort of happened?
It just happened. It's, oh, there's a Microsoft store. I better go in.
Uh-huh.
And yes, this is typical. In Tyson's Corner, it's the exact same thing. They are across the corner from each other. In Boston, where they're just opening the new one, you've got a huge Microsoft store right outside the courtyard, and inside the courtyard, you've got an Apple store.
An Apple store. Yeah. So it's like Starbucks opening up right next to the
Noah's
mom and
bagels.
Pop. Yeah, except Apple's not a mom and pop shop. Yeah. But that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Big thanks to everybody who submits stories in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. We use that to figure out what stories we want to talk about each day. And huge thanks to you, Father Robert Ballasaire, for joining us. We breezed through your introduction at the beginning of the show, but I wanted to give you plenty of time to tell people about This Week in Enterprise Tech, which premieres today.
Today, in just about an hour or so here, we're going to be talking about enterprise topics. Basically, it's a show that's dedicated for IT professionals, for enterprise executives, or just anyone who wants to know how the communications world in which we live is put together. It's going to be a little bit of fun. It's going to be a lot of geeking out. It's going to be a little bit of learning. In fact, if people go to my Twitter feed right now at PadreSJ, I've got a link there for the homework for episode 1. I'm going to be teaching some basic networking concepts, and hopefully people will walk away a little bit more learned.
But they don't have to.
They don't have to. You could be totally just...
But
you
if know, they want to,
out.
If you want to get smarter,
yeah,
it's there.
Smart's good.
That's absolutely
we like
awesome.
Smart.
Yeah. So at noon today,
and we've got Mary Jo Foley on talking about the latest releases from Microsoft. We've got Brian Chi, who is the director of the Advanced Network Computing Laboratory in Honolulu, Hawaii. We're all going to visit him, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, we should. We
yes,
really
absolutely.
Should visit
we can
for
do
a long time.
An episode from his studio.
It would just be good research.
It would. Yeah. It would. And then we've got Curtis Franklin, who runs Enterprise Efficiency. So it's going to be a good panel.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to it. Of course, you can find it at twit.tv/Twiet. Is that right? T-W-I-E-T?
Yes.
Page is not live yet, but it will. Yeah, it should be very shortly.
Don't be quiet.
Please.
Yeah.
Quiet on the set.
Subscribe to
like
Quiet,
that.
Please. That's it for us today. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. And give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. Please do it. 260-TNT-SHOW. Paul Spain from New Zealand joins us from here tomorrow. We'll see you then.